You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Finding ways to lose. On this just-completed Western Conference road trip, the Rockets had a 19-point lead in Minnesota turned into a 12-point loss. They then didn't even show up in Thursday's embarrassment in Utah. What they hadn't had yet, until Saturday, was a dramatic late-game collapse. So naturally, in this season where so many things have inexplicably gone wrong, the Rockets pulled off the trifecta in Saturday's 107-104 crushing defeat in Dallas against the hated Mavericks. With that as the backdrop, welcome in to another episode and a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary, for better and for worse, on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. The good news for the Rockets, and we'll get to it in segment two, is that they did play better. It's not that there were no positives to take out of what happened Saturday in Dallas. Chris Paul and James Harden combined for 58 points on 50% shooting. The turnovers were down. They each had 8 assists. Clint Capela had a double-double on the inside against DeAndre Jordan. It wasn't like there weren't any positive for the Rockets. Nene, in 17 minutes, was a plus 13. And this is a Dallas team that, despite expectations going into the year, certainly appears pretty good now. It's not just what they're doing against the Rockets, although they now have beaten them twice in the past 2 weeks. But the Mavs at 13-11 on the year, and they're especially tough at home, where they've now won 9 straight games. So this was not going to be an easy game for the Rockets regardless. But to lead off, we have to discuss what went wrong, because when you have an 8-point lead, as the Rockets did, with under 3 minutes to go in a basketball game, you should win that the vast, vast majority of the time, especially if you're in a bad spot where the Rockets were entering this game and desperately needed it and yet somehow found a way to lose. When the aforementioned Nene hit a pair of free throws with just over 3 minutes to go, the Rockets were up 102-94. Then Mavs rookie sensation Luka Doncic went on a personal 11-0 run, 3 three-pointers in there, including a pair of dagger step-backs. The Rockets got it as close as 1 in the final minute, but they weren't able to cut off Jalen Brunson on the drive. That put it to 3. Eric Gordon missed a pair of shots that would have tied the game. But the defining sequence for me wasn't what happened in the final minute. And even though Luka deserves a ton of credit, the Rockets have to control what they can control. And what most stood out to me was how quickly they unraveled, particularly on the offensive end, once they faced their first punch in the mouth, so to speak. And it gets back to that theme of mental fragility that I've said throughout this season, that even though the Rockets have a number of issues in terms of the talent of the roster, maybe the aging curve, certainly depth, all of those are very real. By and large, the bigger problem is that the stars need to be the stars. And too often, even the leadership of this team seems to fall victim to that spiraling effect that we have talked about over and over this season, to the point where some of these players, it feels like, are almost waiting for the other shoe to drop and something to go wrong. Because in this game, for the first 45-plus minutes, so much went right, and especially in the fourth quarter. These were quality games from Chris Paul and James Harden, even by their standards when they are on. 50% shooting on the road in a hostile environment, turnovers down. Chris Paul played 38 minutes and had only 2 turnovers. There were a ton of things that went right. Defensively, the Rockets' communication looked a lot better than it has of late. They went through nearly a 6-minute stretch in the fourth quarter from about the 9:50 mark until about 4 minutes left, in which they didn't allow a single point to Dallas. They were dialed in, and yet all it took was one mistake, and things spiraled so, so quickly. That mistake, after Nene made the 2 free throws to put the Rockets up 8, the Rockets, they overhelped effectively. Nene helped out on a drive. I believe it was Harrison Barnes, but he was covered up pretty well by Eric Gordon. Nene doubled for reasons that are unclear. That broke down the defense. It left Luka on, first they went to Matthews up top, and then they swung it to a wide open Luka, best player on the team, even as a rookie. Give him the rookie of the year. He's that good. And he switched that 3. That brought the Mavs within 5. And at that point, things got tight, and you could see here we go again happening. In the final couple of minutes, what was most telling, it started when Chris Paul went 0 of 2 at the line. This is a guy who's better than 90% a year ago. He did his classic rep move, missed both of them. No, I don't think that that's an indication that he's washed. You can have guys that shoot quality free throws when they're in their 50s and 60s. Just ask Calvin Murphy. What happened with Chris Paul isn't about the aging curve. It's that for whatever reason, he's pressing. Everyone is, in my opinion, and it's but right now, the biggest factor on the court, even more than their talent, are depth deficiencies. We also, in the final minutes, we had a James Harden air ball. The one bucket they made could have been a travel. It was very close to that on a Harden runner in the lane. And then Harden and Paul didn't even get off shots when they really needed it in the final 30 seconds and ended up with a pair of Eric Gordon threes. And appropriately, both of them were misfires. And to be honest, we shouldn't forget about Mike D'Antoni either. This is a failure of leadership across the board, certainly in terms of the players, but you can say the staff as well. I'm sure they would be open to taking their share of blame. One thing that stood out, I mentioned that three from Luka in the corner that cut it from 8-5 with under 3 minutes to go, jolting the Mavs and that crowd back to life. Well, it started when Nene unnecessarily helped on the Harrison Barnes drive. The Rockets had Clint Capela waiting at the scorer's table to check in. I commented before how odd it was to see Nene. Now, again, he did play pretty well, a plus 13 in his 17 minutes, and Clint Capela was not nearly as active as he needed to be on the glass. Capela had a double-double, mentioned 12 and 13. Well, DeAndre Jordan, his counterpart, had 12 and 20, including 9 of his 20 rebounds on the offensive glass. So I think to some degree they liked Nene's toughness. But at the end of the game, with so much of it devolving into switching, the Rockets wanted the flexibility of Clint Capela. Well, if it's that big of a deal, why didn't the Rockets call a timeout on the other end to ensure that Clint could get in the game? Instead, it was a Nene breakdown that ultimately led to that Luka 3. Now, granted, I still would not have helped off Luka. I would have made Wes Matthews or anyone else shoot the ball in that situation, especially with Luka alone and in the corner. But if having Capela's defensive flexibility is that big of a deal, then why weren't you ready to call a timeout and get him in when you could, as opposed to waiting for the whistle? That's another little thing that played into this. But as soon as Luka hit that 3 to cut it to 5, everything unraveled. Offensively, they started playing the clock, which they do too often this season, late in close games, making them very predictable, not starting the offense until the final few seconds. And then even when things did go right, such as Chris Paul getting 2 free throws on that rip move, well, he missed both of them. And in case anyone is prone to thinking that this was an exaggeration, that this was just the Luka effect, he stole a game for Dallas with an 11-0 run that could have happened to anyone, what makes it so troubling for the Rockets is that this is not a one-off. We have seen this happen over and over again. In games decided this year by 5 points or less, the Rockets are now 2-4. They are in the bottom 5 of the league in shooting percentage in clutch situations. That's games within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. Overall, their efficiency in clutch situations ranks 27th out of 30 NBA teams in the clutch, getting outscored by 21 points per 100 possessions in those situations. The teams in that bottom with the Rockets and Pelicans, I'm quoting Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle here, include the Cavaliers, Hawks, Nets, and Suns. Those are the company the Rockets are keeping. That's an appropriate line from Jonathan in his recap at HoustonChronicle.com. And at this point, with the Rockets 11-4, now losers of all 3 games in the road trip, 7 of their last 9, it's hard to make excuses and say this should turn around. We're deep enough into a year now, well past the quarter point and rapidly approaching being 1/3 of the way through your 82-game sample. At some point, you are what your record says you are. And right now, the Rockets are an 11-14 basketball team through 25 games. Now, as promised, I'm not going to forget about the good that happened in the first 45 minutes, because when the Rockets look at the game film, they are going to see lots of positives to draw upon. A lot of the blame for what's gone on this season in this 11-14 start, it's generally been about trying to find a scapegoat. And I understand that when you go from 65 wins, the juggernaut the Rockets were a year ago, basically a hamstring away from the title, to this, it's easy to want to find something to pin it all on. Early in the year, it seemed popular to blame everything on the Rockets front office, not keeping Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute, but it gets complicated to chalk everything up to that the deeper the Rockets go into the season, and also the fact that both Ariza and Bamute are not exactly lighting the world on fire in their current situations in Phoenix and Los Angeles, respectively. other popular whipping boys early in the year. Of course, there was Carmelo Anthony. Well, now he's been gone almost for a month. The defense has not turned around. In some respects, it's actually gotten worse. And then the Rockets losing Jeff Bezdelic. Well, Bezdelic came back the Friday after Thanksgiving in Detroit. And as mentioned, from that point on, the Rockets have now lost 7 of 9 games since that 5-game winning streak, which is when Bezdelic came back. So the problems plaguing the Rockets, they're much more simple, or much more complex, excuse me, than the simplistic explanations of just one or two personnel moves that went awry, and if you change them, none of this happens. I don't believe that. There's a lot of things going on, and we'll discuss them as we make our way through our recap today of this 107-104 loss that the Rockets suffered in Dallas to the Mavs. But in recent days, one of the more popular theories that's been out there on Rockets Twitter, and especially NBA Twitter, is Chris Paul washed? And I understand at 33 years old, you're 14, you just got him that 4-year, $160 million deal. Any signs of slippage are going to be put under the microscope. That's just how it goes at that age and with that contract. I've said for a while that even though the cumulative numbers are not where Chris wants them to be, we know he's been dealing with injuries, first to his shooting elbow, then to one of his hamstrings. Now, yes, you can worry about those because players at his age are much more prone to soft tissue injuries. I agree with that. But generally speaking, he has had enough highs. He's had some games where he has been brilliant to where I'm not seeing just the slow erosion, the decay that you typically see when, say, a Carmelo Anthony the last couple of years hits his aging-related decline. With Chris, I tend to think it's more acute, whatever's been going on with him. And Saturday night, this was a really strong game for him. 23 points on 10 of 20 shooting, just 3 of 7 behind the arc, which is pretty good, but that tells you that he was 7 of 13 above 50% inside the arc, and it's not like he was getting to the rim very much, if it at all, against DeAndre Jordan. No, he was pulling up from the mid-range, and he looked as comfortable on those as I've seen him in quite some time. Had 8 assists to just 2 turnovers. I believe he had 5 the other night in Utah. Well, those were cut back dramatically. He also played a team-high 38 minutes. So against a pretty good team in Dallas, again, 13-11, they've won 9 straight home games. Tip your cap to those guys. Chris Paul looked pretty good. The same could be said for James Harden. 35 points, 8 assists, 11 of 22 shooting, 6 of 16 from 3. That's an MVP stat line on the road in a game in which the Rockets really, really needed it. James Ennis had 10 points and 4 rebounds in 24 minutes, and I thought James Ennis, that is, has been bringing more energy, and his springs, after suffering a grade 2 hamstring strain early in the year, his springs have progressively gotten better and better, and I think he's making more of an impact for the Rockets as the season moves along. Despite the expectations going into the year, the Mavs are a good team. They entered having won their last 8 at home and with a winning record, and the Rockets, through 45 minutes, they out-executed them. They did it offensively. You mentioned Chris Paul and James Harden, their stars doing the heavy lifting, each shooting 50% from the field. And defensively, the switching, the communication, it was as good as I've seen it in quite some time. The Rockets held the Mavs scoreless for nearly 6 game minutes in the fourth quarter. Nene off the bench. It was a game in which, for whatever reason, Capella didn't seem to have the energy on the glass to match DeAndre Jordan. Well, Nene, in his 17 minutes, was a plus 13. The Rockets were with him on the floor. So if you can separate the hideousness of whatever happened late in the game, and that's what the Rockets will try to do, they're taking Sunday off entirely, not even practicing, and I think that's a good call. Try to clear your heads a bit and then come back to work on Monday. The Rockets don't play again until Tuesday night against the Blazers. Kicks off a stretch in which 8 of the next 11 for the Rockets are at home in the friendly confines of Toyota Center. Maybe that can kickstart a run. We'll have to wait and see. But the challenge for the Rockets at this point, as I said on Twitter during the game, it's largely between the years. And that's when things can really get troubling, and you have to worry about, even if a team on paper should be better than what they are, the Rockets still second to last in the entire Western Conference, even if on paper it makes no sense, at some point you are what your record says you are, because when you consistently lose games, especially in a wide variety of ways, you tend to build poor habits. And that's what I saw late in the game. Despite all those positives that happened over the balance of 48 minutes, especially the first 45 plus, once the Rockets got punched in the mouth and faced a little bit of adversity late in the game, it felt like, especially on offense, they went into a shell, and all of a sudden the old habits started to emerge again. Even if you want to say, well, Luka hit a couple of really tough setbacks, let's pretend that he just hits one of those and not both. Okay, well then the game is tied, and the Rockets are still stuck in mud offensively and seemingly have everything going against them. And by the way, they've lost every overtime game that they've been faced with of late. So even though Luka hit a couple of tough shots in his personal 11-0 run, it's not to take away anything from him, but the Rockets have to focus on what they can control. And despite all the positives we saw throughout the game, once it got tight late, they reverted back to old, troubling habits. Even the stars, you mentioned Chris Paul, 0 of 2 at the line earlier with a couple of minutes left in a 2-point game. James Harden had an air ball in there. Also, the one bucket that the Rockets did have, it very easily could have been a travel. That one from Harden, even though Paul improved his turnover efficiency, cutting it to 2, Harden is still a bit too turnover prone with 5 for the game. Actually, 6, sorry. And above all else, it's those clutch figures that I cited earlier that to me are most troubling. In the bottom 5 of the league in shooting percentage, 3-point shooting percentage, and overall offensive efficiency, outscored by 21 points per 100 possessions in games that are within 5 points either direction in the final 5 minutes. That's so troubling because last year that was the strength of the Rockets. If you remember, in the final 5 minutes, when it was close, when Chris Paul and James Harden played, their numbers were off the charts. To see it do a complete 180 like that with fairly similar personnel, especially the stars of the team, that tells you that it's less about bodies, it's less about tactical changes, it's less about X's and O's, and it's more about something going on between the ears. Things that are making it to where what should happen on paper is not. And that can be the toughest thing to overcome. Because, look, the Rockets should have a better team, especially by the end of the year, than they do right now. Now, in segment 3, we'll talk more about the trade factor, what they can do, and also the fact that the aggregation deadline passed on Friday without a move. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. That's Daryl Morey territory. But yes, the Rockets, they do need more depth. The 9 through 12 spots of the roster, especially now you have 3 projects for what I consider your 13, 14, and 15 slots, those being Jochi, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Gary Clark. Yes, the Rockets need better depth. They could also use one more 3-and-D type to replace one of Ariza and Bamute, even if you factor in and give James Ennis the benefit of the doubt and say he's replacing one of those. Okay, well, you could probably use a second, especially since Carmelo Anthony didn't pan out. There are some talent deficiencies with this roster. I'm not meaning to diminish that. But when you have those issues combined with an inability to take care of business in games that are there for the taking, that's when things can get really frustrating. And we start to see the first signs of fracture, the quotes from Eric Gordon in the locker room after the Utah loss of guys allegedly not being used right, not him not having fun, which is a little silly because Gordon underachieving for the season as a whole, he might be the biggest underachiever individually of anyone on this entire Rockets roster. So to me, with Eric, it's a situation where he needs to hold the mirror up before giving any sort of declarative statement like that, in my opinion. But to get back to the main point, I always say that it's easier to work on your flaws if you're able to win a game in the interim, meaning that even if things don't go right, it's much easier to look at your mistakes and learn from them in the film room if you aren't overburdened with the fact that you are consistently losing games. And that's something that happened a year ago. It's not that the Rockets were just breathtaking and perfect over 82 games. They weren't. There were definitely peaks and valleys. But in these games that could go either direction, led by Chris Paul and James Harden, they were able to steal games that were basically swing moments. They won those, and then that kept them in the right frame of mind to keep improving and to implement the changes that Mike D'Antoni and his staff would put into place in practice. Now they're losing those games, and you couple that with all the other factors, because no, it's not as simple as finding one excuse, but there's some validity to all of them. The talent in depth isn't what it was a year ago. There are probably some aging effects with guys like Chris Paul, PJ Tucker. The rest of the Western Conference, including teams a year ago that were at the bottom, like Dallas, is significantly better. It's not all any of those factors, but collectively, the combination of those, it all chips away at the Rockets. And one way that you can counteract it, and they did a year ago, even when these factors weren't all there, was by winning the close ones, or at least some of them. Well, now the Rockets are 2-4 in games decided by 5 points or less. To put that in perspective, they were 12-4 in games decided by 5 points or less a season ago. So the way I look at it is that in a vacuum, if you just look at the box score, there are certainly some positives that you can take from Saturday's close loss in Dallas. The Rockets played a lot better on both ends. I understand that. But when you have all the headwinds that are working against them throughout this season, and we've discussed them ad nauseum the past few weeks as we make our way through this 11-14 start for the Rockets, if you have all of those headwinds and you're not able to steal games that are there for the taking here or there, think about how much easier it would be if the Rockets were 13-12 or 14-11 instead of 11-14. They'd still be a disappointment, yes, but you'd see a path where, hey, we're not that far off. You go on 1 7- or 8- game winning streak, and all of a sudden it feels like the old Rockets are back. Well, now, even if they do that, what, you're 4 or 5 games over 500 and you're approaching the halfway point? When you get to this stage of the season and you are 3 games under 500, it's troubling. And the Rockets a year ago, it's not that these issues were never prevalent, but perhaps with the gap between the top of the Western Conference and the lower tiers being much greater, you know, they could show up on the floor and with their talent advantage, that be enough to carry them through, especially with Chris Paul and James Harden able to execute late if the game is close. This year, for whatever reason, and I strongly suspect it's between the years, they're not able to do that. And so when you combine all the things we've discussed in terms of the flaws of the roster composition, the improving Western Conference, yada yada, with their inability to win those same types of close games down the stretch with your leaders, James Harden and Chris Paul, not executing at nearly the same efficiency in those situations as they did just 1 year ago, it's really tough to see how you turn it around, because what can you hold on to? At a bare minimum, to make it through the tough times, you need to be able to cling to something, to say, this is what we do well. What is it right now that the Rockets do well? Offensively for the season, they've been better than they have in the defensive end, but even with the offense, we saw them just go through a 5-quarter stretch in Minnesota and Utah where they scored a combined 85 points, again, in 5 quarters. In the 107-104 loss on Saturday in Dallas, they went from scoring 102 in the first 45-plus minutes to scoring just 2 points in the final 3. The defense for the season as a whole has been bad, and while the balance of the figures still show them to be a good offensive team, because the clutch performance is so poor, it's not like they really have trust on that end either. And that's what leads to a fractured basketball team, which is what I think you have at the moment. And I'm not going to say it's impossible to overcome that, because Chris Paul, James Harden, those are Hall of Famers. I firmly believe that Mike D'Antoni is one of the best coaches in the NBA. But this is going to be a test of the Rockets' leadership, their mettle, whatever you want to call it, unlike anything they have seen before in this Chris Paul, James Harden era. Because what's going on now, it's not just about not having enough talent and needing to bring in a few more bodies to fortify the 9 through 12 spots on the depth chart and not make them as tired or as prone to injuries. No, in addition to all of that, what I see now is a problem of confidence. And to overcome that, it's not impossible, because if you squint hard enough, there were some positives in the first 45-plus minutes of this game. But when you have all the other factors working against them and then you add in a crisis of confidence, it's really tough. Hopefully they can overcome it. I do trust Chris Paul, James Harden, and Mike D'Antoni a lot, but for all the money they're being paid, they're going to have to earn it, especially in the coming days, with no trade on the immediate horizon and a schedule that does not let up for some time. Rockets next 4, Portland and the Lakers at home, both playoff teams at the moment, then at Memphis, and then home for Utah. So they're certainly not going to get a break in the scheduling department either. Now, to close out the podcast, I want to touch on the trade component. I mentioned to close out the final segment that there's no trade on the immediate horizon. And the reason I feel somewhat confident in saying that, you could never say anything with 100% certainty with Daryl Morey, is that the aggregation deadline passed on Friday. That's something we discussed a lot last week, without a move for the Rockets. And the aggregation deadline is a refresher. That's the last day that players can be dealt around the NBA. That's why you saw George Hill traded to Milwaukee, with the Cavs receiving Matthew Dellavedova and John Henson. It's the last day that players can be dealt and then retraded, because there's a 60-day mandatory waiting period before you can again trade newly acquired players as part of a package. So with the final trade deadline for this season in early February, December 7th was 60 days before that, any trades had to be done by Friday and completed in order for the players that you receive to be traded again as part of a package. Now, they can be dealt individually, but you rarely see just one player dealt in these trades, because they probably, for value purposes, one way or another, need to be combined with other assets. So if you can't trade them in combination with others, then it gets very, very difficult. And the Rockets were clearly incentivized to make a move. We had reports from Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle, Dave Hardesty of Clutch Fans earlier last week. The Rockets were hopeful of making a move for wing depth. We had Sham Sharania of The Athletic reporting Friday that the Rockets were looking at dealing Brandon Knight for more movable contracts. That's exactly what we speculated here at Locked On Rockets during the week. When you look at players who are actually eligible to be dealt, keep in mind newly signed players like Michael Carter-Williams, Carmelo Anthony, James Ennis are not trade eligible until December 15th. So if the Rockets were going to make a deal by the Friday, December 7th trade deadline, it couldn't involve any of those. It's certainly not going to involve James Harden, Chris Paul, or Clint Capella, your big three. So really, it just leaves you, in terms of guys who are eligible to be dealt and make a significant enough salary to get a decent return, Brandon Knight and Marquese Chris. And Brandon Knight, making over $14 million a year, by far the most likely to go if you're going to acquire a player of any significance, because with the Rockets being an above the cap and a luxury tax team at that, then he's the only way that you could make the math work. So the Rockets were looking to make a deal with Brandon Knight. Ultimately, they did not. As far as whether that was a smart decision or not, it's tough to say unless you know what the offers Daryl Morey had in front of him, what those proposals were. We're not speaking from a position of any knowledge, so I'm not going to say whether it was a smart move or not. What I can tell you is what I think the criteria were, and I laid it out in Thursday's show. We looked at both the upside and the downside of a move. The downside with Brandon Knight is that he has yet to play basketball in the last two seasons. He missed all of last year with the ACL tear, and then he's missed the first couple of months of this year with an infection in that surgically repaired knee. And right now, he is seen largely as a negative asset, because for a player who had some defensive issues and inefficiencies even when he was in his prime, and now is coming off an ACL tear and doesn't have data in the last two seasons, you couple those factors with a guy making nearly $15 million a year with a guaranteed salary through 2020, and he's going to be seen as a negative asset. And you would have to attach picks to him, and that's what Shams reported the Rockets were open to doing, to get other teams to take on that contract. With that said, the Knight contract is important to the Rockets because, really, that's the only non-essential piece that the Rockets can match salaries with to bring in a player making double-digit millions. To make the math work, and the Rockets are capped out for the foreseeable future, you have to send out close to as much salary as you take in. And the only way the Rockets can do that without cutting into their current core would be by using that Brandon Knight contract, which used to be Ryan Anderson before they acquired Knight with the deal that sent Ryan to Phoenix in late August. The template for a deal involving the Rockets and Brandon Knight was pretty obvious. I mentioned that George Hill, Dellavedova deal between Milwaukee and Cleveland. Effectively, George Hill has just a minimal guarantee for next year, so he may as well be an expiring contract. To get that cap flexibility, the Bucks shedding nearly $19 million in guaranteed salary between Dellavedova and John Henson for the expiring of George Hill sent the Cavaliers a future first and a future second. And the true benefit of Hill for Milwaukee, it's not just they can have flexibility next summer because they did it by the aggregation deadline. They can also use Hill's largely expiring contract as a trade chip in February as well for further upgrades, if one is available. I'm sure a similar deal was there for the Rockets. The name I threw out last week that jumped off the page to me was J.R. Smith, a very similar contract to George Hill with a minimal guarantee for next year. But the downside to it for the Rockets is that whatever draft compensation you would have to give up to remove the barrier of Knight having one more year of guaranteed money, it might go down if Knight comes back, and he's supposedly about a week away now, and plays well. So for the Rockets and in fans, in terms of how they view Daryl Morey through this, it's not just about the proposals, it's also how does Knight look behind closed doors in practice, doing basketball activities. All we've seen from him was one game with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. In my opinion, part of the calculus for the Rockets is that they think whatever draft compensation they would have had to have given up, and their draft compensation for this year, by the way, is looking better than ever, and I think they view whatever they would have had to have given up now, they think they could get a better deal if Brandon Knight returns and plays quality basketball. In my opinion, that's the gamble. Will it work out? We'll have to wait and see when Brandon Knight inevitably gets back on the court. My guess is within 7 to 10 days. But what that means for the Rockets in that Brandon Knight salary slot, which as mentioned is crucial for them if they're going to acquire another key piece to this rotation, the bet is that Brandon Knight, if he returns to form and plays as well as they think he can, would have better value than whatever they were able to trade him for at this time and then trying to repackage that guy in February. Bigger picture, though, what I take from the passing of this aggregation deadline, and I think you should take as well, is that I think we're going to see the Rockets' priorities shift. It's not that trades aren't possible even today, although I think if the Rockets were close to any deal, they would have done it on Friday to give them maximum flexibility for this season. I think at this point, you're more likely to see them wait until after December 15th, which is when players are eligible to be dealt that were signed this offseason. Of course, that includes the Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony roster spots that are taken up right now. But, of course, it's not just players with the Rockets. It's players all around the league, so it'll open up a lot more possibilities. That said, with Daryl Morey, anything can happen at any point, and even though I doubt there's a trade before the 15th now, that's Saturday, and that's going to be a tough stretch in the interim, the Blazers, the Lakers, and then even if there was a trade Saturday morning of the 15th, I highly doubt all the players involved would go through physicals and they'd be eligible to play that night, so you're probably looking at least three games before you can get reinforcements, which is a downer with the way the current Rockets are playing, losers of three in a row and 7 of 9. But even looking beyond this week, the calculus has changed for the Rockets in the trade market because no longer is it about positioning yourself for the next move. Now that the aggregation deadline has passed, I don't expect the Rockets to be as interested in the J.R. Smith, Damari Carroll types via trade. Now, conceivably, they could via buyout, because I think with a lower investment cost, the Rockets still have most of their mid-level exception, they take in one more 3-and-D type, and any of the expiring contracts are also potential buyout candidates. You can throw Trevor Ariza into that mix as well. And so I think the Rockets would be interested in a minimal commitment to, you know, kind of trial and error one of those guys if they could get one. But in terms of the trade market, even if Brandon Knight doesn't play that well and it remains to be seen what he has left in the tank, although at 26 years old, the Rockets are hopeful he can bounce back. Just look at what Wes Matthews, now 32 years old, is doing after his string of injuries in Dallas. But the reason the types of trades I threw out last week, like J.R. Smith, Damari Carroll, the reason I don't see them as feasible anymore, at least in part, the logic for those was that even if those players don't work out, you could still turn around and use those players and their corresponding salary slots as bait in February at the real trade deadline for a bigger fish. If the Rockets were to make a move like that now, they can't do that. And that's why I don't see them moving Brandon Knight unless it's for a piece they really, really like. If it's a piece that they are all in on, then yeah, the Rockets will do it because they want to make themselves a better basketball team. But one thing I don't buy, I've seen some suggestions on Twitter that maybe the Rockets are pivoting towards next summer rather than the trade deadline, conceding that this season is lost and they need to retool. I don't believe that at all. With Chris Paul on that contract, and no, I don't believe there's any possibility the Rockets would ever trade Chris Paul. With Chris Paul at his age and on that contract, every season with his diminishing prime is precious. They are not going to throw that away. I think every focus for the Rockets right now is on maximizing their chance to win this season. And if you were to trade Brandon Knight for J.R. Smith today, or Damari Carroll, or any other large expiring contract, to me, it does not make sense anymore, because then you can't go out and use that, at least as part of a package, to then upgrade that spot in February, because the aggregation deadline has passed. At this point, I think you're all in on Brandon Knight and his return. Hopefully in the short term, he gives you a boost. But long term, that spot and its salary, that's going to open more doors and have more flexibility for the Rockets than if they trade him in the here and now. That's not to say the Rockets won't make trades. I definitely think once the 15th gets here, they'll be very active in discussions with Michael Carter-Williams, Carmelo Anthony, but also looking at guys around the league now that everyone can be dealt. But as far as Brandon Knight, with that aggregation deadline passing, I think the Rockets are switching gears. I don't see the Rockets looking to move Knight unless it's for a guy they really, really like, because they want the option of being able to swing for big fish in February. And to be honest, Brandon Knight is your best shot at one of those fish, at least from a salary matching perspective. They need him for that. And if they were to trade for a J.R. Smith type today, it wouldn't be possible to combine his salary and deals. So that's why, in my opinion, the Rockets are shifting gears. Certainly, I think Brandon Knight will eventually be a trade candidate, but for right now, with the Rockets letting the aggregation deadline pass, it doesn't really make sense to shop Knight all that heavily. At this point, the best course of action is to let Knight come back to the floor. Hopefully, short-term, he gives you a boost of quality play in that fourth guard spot, and beyond that, maybe that bolsters his trade value down the line as the Rockets get closer to February and the real trade deadline, where hopefully some new, bigger names will emerge. Anyway, with that, that's where we'll leave off for today. It's a bit of a bummer, and we went a bit long discussing the hypotheticals, but can't help but discuss hypotheticals when you're a fan of a team that won 65 games a year ago, and now all of a sudden they're 11-14 and second to last in the entire Western Conference. It's not too fun to talk about what's happening right now. It's more fun to talk about what could happen and how the Rockets can inevitably steer this ship back in the right direction. Whatever happens, though, of course, we'll break it all down right here at Locked On Rockets, because that's what we do here as the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. If you want more content in the interim, the best place to get it is on Twitter before our next episode. I'm on there at Ben DuBose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. I've also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website, lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can access our prior content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even for you, the human being, as a potential advertiser. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, if you have not subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, so on and so forth, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes right when they come out at your listening provider of choice. And we get the benefit, of course, of boosting our subscriber figures and our positive reviews so that advertisers will come back. And that's how we keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. And on those listening platforms of choice, of course, there's a lot of other shows. The reason we have such great distribution is because we're at the Locked On Podcast Network, part of a great network of local experts across not just the NBA, but the NFL, some Major League Baseball and college sports here in Houston. That includes the Houston Texans. Their fortunes, a lot different than the Rockets right now. Texans have won 9 in a row. They're going for their 10th today. Hopefully, we'll see what happens. I'm recording this Sunday morning. But whatever happens, as they go for 10 in a row against the Colts, my friends Robert Land and Brian Patterson will have you covered over at Locked On Texans, where they're a lot happier these days than we are at Locked On Rockets. But you can check out Locked On Texans and listen to them at the same places you listen to Locked On Rockets. Anyway, one final time, the unhappy final from Dallas: Mavs 107, Rockets 104. Rockets now 11 and 14 through 25 games. They've lost 3 in a row and 7 of 9. So with that, welcome to the new week. Hopefully it turns around for the Rockets now that 8 of their next 11 are at home, starting with Tuesday night in Portland. But whatever happens, we'll be right here to break it all down for you at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.